Gail Kouvreau thought she'd found the perfect man in Scott Maughton, a sexy rock and roller with down-home family values.
I really thought this is going to be the man that I'm going to be with the rest of my life.
I think Scott was well on his way to becoming a rock star.
But instead of climbing the charts, Scott found himself on a different kind of most wanted list.
I want to get him off the street to stop him from hurting more people.
It was a nightmare. It was my worst nightmare.
When it comes to love and marriage, things aren't always as they seem. When you're a single mom, struggling to do it all, love often takes a back seat. Gail Kouvreau can vouch for that.
I was in my 30s and I'd already been through one marriage. I was working for a delivery company and had just purchased a daycare center that was quite large, and trying to juggle that and the house and the yard and the kids was really busy.
She was in and out of a few relationships, nothing very serious. She didn't really have too much time for dating.
But one summer day in 1996, while working her delivery job, a chance encounter would turn Gail's love life around.
I walked in one of my deliveries and I thought, wow, look at him. Dark hair, dark eyes, gorgeous.
32-year-old Scott Maughton was a divorced father of two young girls. By day, a humble graphic designer. By night, the sexy lead guitarist in a popular Seattle-area band.
I wonder, because, you know, musicians, they're wild, they're crazy, they're on drugs, they're partying every night. But he was different.
In a music scene dominated by grunge and heroin, Scott was a rare straight arrow.
He didn't drink, he didn't do drugs. He was raising one of his daughters, smart, good-looking. He was just all around perfect.
Gail piqued Scott's interest too. A few months later, Scott asked her out, and Gail was thrilled.
It was probably the best date that I had ever had with a man. We spent the entire evening just talking about our children and lots of laughter.
When my mom first met Scott, I was around the age of 11. I could tell that she had kind of fallen head over heels for him.
We started seeing each other pretty quickly. It really turned into a very solid relationship.
At last, Gail thought she had finally found her perfect match. But a few months later, she observed something odd when she and Scott were on vacation in Hawaii.
We were driving along and we were going to go to dinner. And suddenly, I looked over at Scott, and he's like slumping over the steering wheel and just making weird faces. And I said, "Are you okay?" And he goes, "No, I'm not. I need to get some food or something. I'm hyperglycemic."
Gail quickly drove to the nearest restaurant where Scott stumbled into the restroom.
He looked really bad. So I asked, "Please, can you just bring us some bread immediately?"
But oddly, by the time Scott came out of the restroom a few minutes later, he was completely recovered.
He comes out, informs me, everything's fine. I thought, well, how in the world could that be? But I let it go. I didn't know what to think.
Gail and Scott carried on with their day. And later that night, Scott had a surprise in store for Gail. He popped the question.
I was so excited. I didn't even have to think about it twice.
Almost a year after they started dating, Gail and Scott made it official in a small church wedding back home near Bothell, Washington.
My mom was a little nervous at the beginning, just like any bride would be. It was a good thing to see her coming down the aisle.
The day of my wedding was one of the happiest days of my life. It was a beautiful day, all the friends and family there, and the kids just loved him so much. I thought this was for life.
It was a promising start for the Maughton family. Until Halloween night, just 2 months into their marriage.
I was invited to go to a dinner with my family, and Scott had a show that night. And I got home and went to bed expecting him to be home late because they have to break down their equipment.
But hours after the show ended, around 4 a.m., Scott still hadn't returned.
I was very worried. I didn't know what could have possibly happened to him. I hadn't had a phone call. So I called the cell phone with no answer.
24 hours later, still with no word from Scott, Gail was frantic and fearing the worst.
She was calling all of their friends and checking hospitals. She called State Patrol, everybody she could think of to try to find him.
Was Scott in trouble? Was it hypoglycemia? Or was something far more sinister going on?
I was panicked. It was just like he vanished.
On October 31st, 1997, just 2 months into their marriage, Gail Kouvreau's husband Scott went to his concert and never came home. Suddenly, after more than 24 hours without word, Scott called.
He said he was okay. He was acting like he was remorseful, but he really didn't have a good answer.
Sheepishly, Scott explained that he'd gone out with friends after the gig and had stayed out so late that he was afraid to come home.
He decided he would just spend the night with these people. It didn't make any sense to me, so I was angry.
But in an effort to keep the peace, Gail told Scott to hurry home.
I had just been married 2 months, and I really, really wanted it to work, so I forgave him. You made a mistake. You know how it made me feel. Please don't do it to me again.
Gail put the incident behind her, and life for the couple was soon back on track. By the spring of 1998, Gail sold her daycare business for a $300,000 profit, and the family moved into a gorgeous new home.
They'd have parties and invite all of us over. They were coming into their own.
Meanwhile, Gail continued to work part-time, while Scott quit his computer job to focus on his music.
Scott was doing great with his music career. There was one album that had come out. He was nominated one of the best guitar players in Seattle.
It was an exciting time for the family. But 1 year into their marriage, their good life began to crumble.
It was almost like a gray cloud kind of came over the family. Like something just wasn't right.
By the fall of 1998, the family began to think that Scott was acting strange.
We were arguing more. He was away from the house a lot more. Just really starting to distance himself from us.
Seemed like he was sick a lot more often than anyone else in the family. Like a mild cold at all times.
Even worse, Gail felt Scott was overlooking the kids.
Suddenly, he said he didn't have enough time to take them to their sports or to go show up for their games. He was too busy with the music and the record coming out.
It seemed like he was trying to find reasons or excuses not to be there at night.
And as Scott's behavior continued to decline, according to Gail, so did their bank account.
Gail estimated that their checking account was depleting by about $200 a day. And when she asked Scott to explain himself, he either got angry or he had some explanation, a camera, a guitar repair. He always had a reason for what was going on.
By the winter of 1999, the relationship was in serious trouble and Gail feared the worst.
I'm not thinking drinking. He's not hungover. Drugs. He doesn't do drugs. So maybe, could it be another woman?
But before she confronted Scott, Gail decided to do some investigating of her own.
When I could hear him down in the den, I heard some shaking, and I thought, that kind of sounds weird. I wonder what that is. It sounds like pills shaking. So I pretended like I was asleep, and I waited till he came up to bed, and then I just lied there for a while, and then I snuck downstairs.
Inside Scott's guitar case, Gail saw something that stopped her in her tracks.
I found a couple bottles of pills with his name on them. I didn't know what it was. I had never recognized the name of the drug.
The next morning, Gail called Scott and demanded an answer. His response blew her away.
I flat out asked him, "Are you a heroin addict?" And he admitted that yes, he was.
According to Gail, Scott told her he took the pills to fight withdrawal symptoms.
I just cried. I was very upset. Heroin is horrible. It's a horrible drug.
I remember the moment Gail told me that Scott was addicted to drugs, and I was shocked, and I remember feeling hurt, just my heart hurt for her.
Suddenly, Gail saw her marriage in a whole new light.
Hawaii, the odd behavior, missing money. It was a relief to find out what the problem was. But it really was devastating to find out it was such a huge problem.
According to Gail, Scott agreed to check into rehab, but soon he was home.
I was actually sitting in the backyard reading a magazine. It was a beautiful sunny day. And I looked up and there was Scott. And I thought, well, what in the world? Why are you here? And he said, well, I got kicked out of the rehab. He said it had something to do with the insurance.
And Scott was adamant that further rehab would have to wait. He had just received a lucrative job offer, playing backup on a solo album for the lead singer of a popular heavy metal band.
He assured me that when it was all over, then he would get himself help.
But according to Gail, before long, the couple's bank account was dwindling once again. And suddenly, Scott stopped coming home. Gail had a hunch that Scott was digging himself deeper into addiction.
He wasn't around at all. He wouldn't even tell me where he was living. I just was falling apart. I didn't believe that he was off the drugs. Things were getting out of control. I didn't know what to do.
With the couple essentially separated, Gail had no choice but to take Scott's name off their bank account. But that didn't stop him.
He would just go into the bank and have with one of my checks that he had stolen and just say, oh no, we're back together again, everything's fine.
He was literally flushing our money down the drain. And so it was very distressing and a terrible time in our lives.
By the spring of 2001, Gail's funds were down to almost nothing. And just when it seemed like things couldn't get much worse, they did.
I just lied awake all night long wondering when these people were going to come after us.
Gail was petrified. She lived in constant fear.
In the spring of 2001, Gail Couvreau hadn't heard from her husband in over 2 months when she received a most disturbing call.
I got a call from one of Scott's friends, one of his new friends that he was hanging out with. He said, there's things about Scott that I think you need to know.
The friend warned Gail to seek protection for herself and her children.
I was literally terrified. I was very frightened for myself and my children.
Gail was a nervous wreck. She was shaking and I was really worried about her.
Gail was determined to protect her children at all costs, so she put their house up for rent and moved.
I didn't feel safe being there anymore, so the best thing I could think of was just, let's get away and see if we can hide from them.
Gail would take different routes home from work, and she was always afraid of where Scott was and what he was planning next.
After almost a year on the run, with no sign of Scott or his friends, Gail's fear slowly subsided.
I thought, okay, this is it. He's finally out of our lives, and we can go on.
So Gail and the children moved back into their home.
I had it leased out for these people. They decided that they didn't want to buy it. So I had to move back into the house to get it prepared to be sold.
I don't know how Gail held it together. It was amazing to me that she actually could get up and get to work and get her job done every day.
But Gail's ordeal wasn't over yet. Within a week, Scott showed up and drove off in one of her cars.
He's already taken everything from me, and then he takes my car. I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe that he had the gall to do this after everything else that he had done.
Gail was on the lookout for Scott, and then one day she spotted him.
So I'm driving down the road, and there comes my car, pulls right out in front of me. I'm like, oh my God, there it is. So I picked up the phone, I called the police, he pulls into the gas station. Next thing I knew, there's 6 cop cars, 12 guns pointed at Scott, the car. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe this is really happening.
Scott was promptly arrested and taken into custody. By now, there were also warrants out on him from another county. By 2003, Gail filed for bankruptcy and divorce.
My life was just shattered, and I was trying to hold everything together.
Gail was done, and by the end of 2003, her divorce from Scott was final. But Scott's run-ins with the law were far from over. In the spring of 2004, Gail turned on the news and saw her ex-husband.
When I looked at the screen, he's in jail, in a little jail outfit.
Scott had been arrested once again for something else entirely.
Scott had a big operation going. I knew he wasn't going to stop.
I just couldn't believe that this was the man that I married.
In April of 2004, Gail watched the news in total shock as her ex-husband Scott Maughton had been arrested again, but not for drugs.
I was shocked because I thought if anything that he was going to be arrested for, it would be drugs. He was running this huge identity theft ring. I had not a clue.
It appeared Scott had been using his computer know-how and an arsenal of high-tech equipment to manufacture fake IDs.
Scott's operation was pretty big. He would have people working for him to get some of the information, sometimes all of it, sometimes not. Whatever he didn't get, he was smart enough to be able to fill in on his own.
They would go to an apartment complex and break into the back of the mailbox panel and just take all the mail. And they did it over and over and over again.
It's my understanding from the police that when they were able to get into his apartment, there was really no living situation whatsoever. A computer, bags and bags and bags of mail.
Among the evidence, authorities found fake passports, driver's licenses, stolen credit cards, and even falsified FBI credentials.
You're stealing from innocent people who had nothing to do with anything and destroying their lives, as if destroying mine and my children's wasn't bad enough.
A few weeks later, Scott went to court, but his case was thrown out due to a problem with the search warrant.
I got the call the next day that there was a technicality and he was set free. I couldn't believe it.
Scott was now a free man. But by the summer of 2007, he would turn up again on the Linwood Police Department's most wanted list.
I received a call from one of our patrol officers. A person had come into our local Lexus dealership and purchased a $71,000 Lexus. The identification had his picture, but the information belonged to the victim of a burglary.
It didn't take police long to identify the photo on the fraudulent license.
I had several responses from nearby agencies that all said it was Scott Maughton. Everybody kind of knew who he was. He'd been committing crimes all over the place, and many agencies were looking for him. I placed Scott on our 10 most wanted list because I knew he wasn't going to stop.
I turned on the TV early in the morning, and there he was on the news, and I couldn't believe it. And I grabbed my phone and called Gail, and I said, "The rock star's at it again."
Scott had fooled everybody into believing he was this rich, famous, successful rock star. He needed the car to drive to fulfill that. He needed to be able to really use the car, though, to go and commit his crimes. He could drive up in a beautiful car. People figured he must have money. Made his life a little easier.
On August 31st, 2007, Scott was arrested and later charged with 10 counts of identity theft, forgery, and possession of stolen property. On February 5th, 2008, 12 years after Gail first met Scott Mauton, he was sentenced to 6 years in prison.
I was glad that Scott was going to jail for a long time once he got sentenced. It feels good knowing that he'll be sitting in prison.
Scott was given the most time that they were legally able to give him. I clapped. I cheered.
Today, Gail lives with her good friend Marka and is slowly picking up the pieces. But she still feels the sting of Scott's betrayal.
Scott took from me hundreds of thousands of dollars. My future that I could have used with this money to invest for myself, my retirement, my children, my home that I worked so hard for. Everything was gone.
All of this has been a very traumatic experience for Gail and her boys. Gail went from a $400,000 home to staying with friends or family.
But despite it all, Gail refuses to be defeated.
He took a lot from us, but there's still life ahead, and I'm still alive and breathing, and so is my mom and my brother, and he can't take everything.
I think that when we go through these things, it changes us. I think it makes us a stronger person, even though we hate hearing that. But I think it makes you take a look at what's important and what isn't important.